Hello, I am Farha Khan. This is Prof Talk. Today I have the pleasure to play an interview I did with Dr. Brandon Konevall yesterday in the CITR studio. Dr. Konevall is a professor that is jointly appointed in both the Arts One program and the School of Music. He's been a faculty member at UBC since 1998, and throughout all of these years, he continues to enjoy the opportunity to work with students from a wide variety of backgrounds and who share his interest in continually seeking new ideas to explore. I think he would agree with me in saying that perhaps the best way to describe the role of professor and student is that we are all, in our multifaceted ways, seekers of knowledge. Brandon Konevall's research interests include music theory and history, European intellectual and cultural history, history and philosophy of science. Last year, he received a UBC Killam Teaching Prize in recognition of excellence in teaching. We began our discussions yesterday about the Arts One program, which is an innovative approach to the first-year experience in the Faculty of Arts. The program is led by a dynamic team of instructors who offer an integrated approach to the humanities that focuses on critical thinking, writing skills, and class participation. But first, here's Brandon reading from his current course in Arts One, titled Dangerous Questions, Forbidden Knowledge.
Are there questions that we should not ask? Is there knowledge that we should not pursue? From secrets of state to the secrets of nature, from the mystery of the other to the mysteries of the self, we ceaselessly confront and probe the limits of our knowledge, ever aware that our attempts to extend its grasp can empower us or possibly even destroy us. The dangers and the allure of our inquiry into the hidden and the forbidden remain an enduring theme in drama and in novels, in philosophy and in science, in religious thought and in poetry, in music and in film. The concern that there should be limits to our knowledge and to the power it brings us has been a shadow haunting our aspiration to know and control all, an anxiety often explored through the figure of the seeker of knowledge, whether Eve or Oedipus, Faustus or Frankenstein, the philosopher who questions our conventions and our convictions, or the detective who uncovers too much. Through both story and sustained argument, and from the Bible to the road, in Arts One we will examine how the moral, social, and psychological costs of our pursuit of knowledge are weighed, assessed, and engaged, and just how boldly we might dare to know.
We just heard you read from a course description in Arts One that you're currently teaching. Can you tell us more about the course and also generally talk about what Arts One is here at UBC?
I'd be happy to. It's a program that's been running over 40 years, and we take as our inspiration, I guess you could say, this 16th century French essayist Michel de Montaigne, who was very interested in the idea of conversation. He wrote that conversation was the most natural and beneficial exercise for the mind, and essentially that's what Arts One is about. We want to have students in conversation with us as much as possible in seminars of 20 and tutorials of 4. We want them talking with us about texts that are in conversation with each other. And so this theme that we're working with in my particular group this year, we have two groups. My group is focusing on the theme of dangerous questions and forbidden knowledge. And it grew out of a few faculty members getting together and saying, well, with this theme in mind, what kinds of books would we like to explore it through? And therefore, we have quite a variety of texts to work with, and I've tried to give some indication of that in the course description itself.
Right. So tell us about the course and how it evolves, beginning with some of the texts that you are looking at, and because there are a number of books that the students read during the period that they're in the course.
Well, we decided that we might as well start in the beginning, so we actually began the year with Genesis, and the first thing that we did was then to follow that up with a text that's in conversation directly with Genesis, which was Immanuel Kant's Conjectural Beginning of Human History, which was a reading of Genesis, and then we also paired with that Kant's famous essay, What is Enlightenment? And what we were interested in doing is getting students thinking immediately about what kinds of questions might be considered dangerous ones to pursue, what kind of knowledge might be forbidden. And we quickly moved on from there through plays by Sophocles and Seneca on Oedipus, Andrew Irvine's play on the death of Socrates. Andrew is a wonderful philosopher working here at UBC who's also been producing plays, and also great works of philosophy like Plato's Republic. Recently we did Rousseau's Discourse on the Origins of Inequality. All sorts of ways of approaching this theme, but the idea is that we're looking at literature and philosophy and the history of ideas and not trying to compartmentalize them, but to integrate them all the time. So the idea is that, you know, if you're going to be reading Hamlet, why not think about Machiavelli's The Prince and consider ways in which Hamlet could be navigating the courts guided by Machiavelli's insights, for example. Or if Plato is concerned in the Republic about what sorts of plays might be dangerous for people to consider, well, it kind of helps if you've actually read something like Sophocles' Oedipus, to which Plato refers, and then to think about ways in which that play might help us understand what Plato's concerns are. So what we're constantly trying to do is encourage students to bring these different areas of experience together, and hopefully to feel as they go through the year that even if we're dealing with a variety of texts, that they're all part of a conversation that is constantly reinforcing itself, reinvigorating itself, reinforming itself, so that it doesn't just seem like a series of interesting texts, but they feel like this is a meaningful experience that's continually growing on itself, so that by the end of the year, the conversation is not over. It will go on, and that they'll be looking for threads of that conversation wherever they might find them.
Why is a program like Arts One so important at UBC?
I think for a variety of reasons. One of the great things about it is that the way the structure of the program works always begins with the students listening to us, faculty members, giving a grand introductory lecture, and no cycle is complete until we, the faculty, are listening carefully to the students themselves. Usually that's in the context of tutorials where they're presenting their own work and essentially leading the discussion. I think this idea that students are a crucial component of the educational experience, that it's not just coming from faculty or from text, but their reaction to these texts and these ideas is something that can't be reinforced enough. And what's lovely about Arts One is that structurally it makes that possible. I can actually get to know each and every one of my students. I can hear my students' thoughts and reactions throughout the course of the year. So I find myself by the end of the year that I've really come to know my students quite a lot better than I did at the beginning of the course, but also those students have really helped me to understand these works much better. I mean, I've just gone through a whole series of essays on The Prince and Hamlet, and I've gotten so much out of it, and honestly, I was really looking forward to reading these essays. And so I think the sense that both students and faculty have a tremendous investment in the learning process is there in the program, and I can't think of a more enjoyable or interesting way to teach these kinds of things.
Now, these students are fresh out of high school, so this program can really make a difference in their future studies at UBC.
Yeah, I think so. One thing that we're always interested in is trying to welcome students into UBC and give them some sense of the variety of experiences that are available to them here. So we really are a gateway program in that sense. Officially, we, I think, give credit for things like first-year English, first-year history, first-year philosophy. But our goal is to let them see all of the campuses being available to them and of interest to them. And this is something that the students seem to respond to very positively, because we are also bringing in guest lecturers as well, and the faculty themselves come from a variety of backgrounds, so that students really have a sense in one course of many possibilities that might lie in their future.
Now, Arts One complements your own interdisciplinary background quite nicely. Can you talk about some of the other things that you do besides teach in Arts One?
Sure. I also teach in the School of Music. Most of what I teach there is music theory, but I also do some music history in the context of a music appreciation course. Also, in terms of my own research, I have a particular interest in fields that don't necessarily fit together in the most obvious ways, but I've done quite a lot of research in connection with the history and philosophy of science and music, especially in the late 16th and early 17th centuries. Also, in terms of other research that I'm doing, I have a strong interest in the idea of conjectural histories, and this is something that's directly informed some of the Arts One reading lists, for example, that I've had a part in developing. So in particular, I've been interested in ideas explored by Thomas More, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Immanuel Kant, Friedrich Nietzsche, and the ways in which they are thinking in historical terms, in a conjectural sense, and how those kinds of histories often connect with ancient literature. So this is something that I think ties in quite a bit with Arts One's general mandate, which is not to stick with a narrow frame of reference, either historically or culturally, but generally speaking, as broadly as possible.
What is your answer when people ask you, what do you do?
Well, usually when people ask me what I do, I just say I'm a lecturer in music and the humanities, because the humanities is something that's quite broad-based in conception, and it's something that sort of gives me the freedom to say, well, yes, I happen to have an interest in philosophy. I make use of that interest in doing research in the history and philosophy of science. Also, of course, as a musician and someone who's been very interested in the history of music, that's something that can tie in as well as a humanities subject in its own right. My general response is, you know, I deal with music in the humanities, and then depending on their interests, they can go in either direction. I mean, some people want to ask more about what specifically I'm doing in the field of music, and I'm happy to tell them about that. If it's humanities, then I can talk about Arts One or whatever research I'm doing, and they can understand that. But it is a bit of an odd job title, if you will.
Do you ever teach outside of Arts One in a department of philosophy or in history or anything like that?
I've never taught a course outside of either Arts One or music, although I have guest lectured sometimes. Right. So, for example, last year, Neil Safir invited me in to speak to his course on the Enlightenment, and I used that as an opportunity to talk about different ways of framing the Enlightenment from the standpoint of Rousseau and Kant. And it was a lovely opportunity to be able to do that for a very interested class.
Now, in all of these years, have former students kept in touch with you?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the great pleasures of something like the Arts One program. We constantly hear back from our students how they're doing, what they're up to, and you never know where you're going to be getting an email or a postcard or a letter from. It could be Cambridge, it could be Delhi, it could be South Africa. I keep hearing from students all the time, and it's nice because you have this sense of a genuine community that grows out of Arts One and continues into the greater world. So I'm always delighted to hear from my students.
Why is teaching such an important part of what a professor does at the university?
I honestly think that the best way to understand something is to try to teach it, in quotation marks. You learn so much by teaching. It's almost like I would not want to write on something if I hadn't first had the opportunity to explore it with students. You get so many ideas out of discussions with them. There are so many new angles that can be brought to something through the kinds of conversations that we have. So I find that it's something that powerfully influences my own thinking, definitely the directions that my research takes. Teaching just seems essential to what one does on campus.
That's great.
Do you believe that the Arts One program can really make a difference?
Yeah, I genuinely do think it makes a very particular difference, not just with respect to the students themselves, but also the kinds of interactions that they then bring to, you know, other classes, other courses. I think the Arts One effect is something that extends well beyond just the students that take the program itself. Arts One students are kind of compelled to contribute in conversation on a regular basis. And I think that one thing that comes out of that is a willingness to kind of take the risk of asking questions, to kind of put yourself in the hot seat. Often the temptation can be, you know, in a public space, to not contribute as much because you think, right, you know, am I going to be gauged unfairly or something like that for something I might say? I think Arts One students sort of get used to feeling like, well, I'm just going to hazard something here. I want to try something out. So I think that's something that's very helpful. Also, with respect to Arts One students themselves, for me, the really magical transition is from them coming into the program and feeling like, right, I'm going to do work, I'm going to be evaluated, in a sense I'm going to be judged, and then through participating in tutorials, critiquing other students' work, participating in conversations, they really become their own judges, their own evaluators. And you can really see this by the end of the year, they'll be talking about their writing in a way that suggests a really comfortable critical independence. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll look at an essay from earlier in the year and say, you know, I thought it was really good at the time, but now I don't like this. I think that was a very strong point, but I think I could have made it more strongly in this way. And you feel as a teacher like, you know, they've just taken over. They're in charge of their own academic destiny, if you will. And that's a nice feeling because you feel that they are genuinely mature to an extent where they can make independent decisions about how they want to study something, how they want to present their ideas, what it is they actually want to study. So all those kinds of things, I think, are really helpful because it's giving students that opportunity to kind of go out in the world. I mean, they don't know everything. We can't possibly teach them everything. What we have to do is put them in a position where they feel like, great, there's tons of stuff for me to learn, and I feel comfortable not knowing all the answers. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable trying to figure out what the interesting questions are. What can I do with this process? And this is another reason why I'm always happy to hear from them, you know, if they've traveled away or something like that, you know. What actually have you been doing with your questioning since, you know, we last spoke? And it's really lovely often to see what they have come up with in the meantime. And you never know. I mean, I had one student who was very interested in studying literature and stuff like that, and next thing I know, he wants to become, you know, an apprentice harpsichord maker. And I think that's fantastic. And it's not something I would have necessarily predicted. And I find often the kind of unpredictable nature of people's lives, career trajectories, and all the rest of it, one of the more fascinating components of the job, because, you know, we'll often see students at a very early life stage, and you know, you have a sense of the person and their interests, but it's delightful that you can't honestly tell where they're going to go next. So I kind of like the excitement of that.
Mm-hmm. But you're also an accomplished pianist. Can you talk about studying with Robert Silverman, who has been a guest on our show?
Yeah, it's a small world. Many years ago, I was Robert Silverman's student, and I think in many senses I still am. Every once in a while, I can't resist putting on one of his recordings, and it's always an educational experience for me hearing how he performs. So he remains a model for me. In terms of performance, yes, I do play the piano. I understand that you'll be using some music from a performance that I gave not too long ago, where I did some fundraising for the Arts One program. And in that case, my theme was, I suppose, interdisciplinarity in a way. The composer I was featuring was Liszt, and all of the pieces on the program were connected with works of literature or particular experiences that Liszt had. And the idea there was to kind of get in contact in a very visceral way with
this world of the 19th century where there wasn't an interest in keeping the arts divided, but in bringing them together as much as possible into a more total experience. So it was my way to kind of try to bring that back to life in the concert hall.
So why is it important that we connect together outside of our own disciplines at the university? I mean, you are a great example of someone who's doing that.
Why do I think it's important? I think because many of us don't live lives that are so compartmentalized. We have many kinds of interests, many experiences that constantly reinforce each other, inform each other. And so I think in terms of education, what we're trying to do is recapture, I hate to use a cliche term, but some of that kind of synergy, or in terms of aesthetics, the synesthesia, really, of experiences that really enrich our lives, but also I think help us to understand the world around us much better. I mean, we were recently looking at, as I mentioned before, Rousseau's Discourse on the Origins of Inequality, and it really strikes me when I read a philosophical work like that, that Rousseau expects us to be going to the theater, to be going to the opera, to be reading novels, that all these kinds of experiences he wants us to bring to understanding what he's trying to convey to us. So I feel, you know, he's a paradigmatic example of an author who thinks that, you know, we should be trying to constantly expand the realm of our experiences and bring that to the act of reading and to understanding.
Mm-hmm. Where are you with your research right now? What stage in your research are you at with looking at all of the things that you mentioned with music?
Well, it's kind of a two-stream model. I have the one stream that I'm trying to close up right now, which is looking specifically at the music theory and early acoustic experiments of Vincenzo Galilei. He was the father of Galileo Galilei, and I've been very interested in ways in which Vincenzo kind of establishes some problems involving the relationship between mathematics and music and mathematical empiricism in general. And then I look at some works by the son, Galileo, that speak to some of the challenges that his father raised. So that's a project that I'm just in the process of wrapping up. What I've begun working on through a series of papers is essentially a large-scale project on conjectural history. And thus far, I've given two papers to early forms of chapters in the line of exploring the foundations for conjectural history through Thomas More and Plato, through Rousseau and Lucretius. And what I'm looking to do next with that is to extend the conversation, if you will, to Kant and Nietzsche in particular. Mm-hmm. So I've made initial steps, I'd say about halfway through developing the foundations for that project at this point. Ultimately, though, I would like to come up with a monograph that's devoted to the idea of the conjectural history, but specifically with attention to conversations between ancient sources and early modern or modern. But I think the logical way to develop that is, you know, to submit these manuscripts, the ones that I've given in conferences a few times so far, and then see what the reception is to them. And based on that reception, as I develop the subsequent chapters, hopefully to pull together a book out of that material. Yeah, in terms of online education, I first got involved in distance education at the invitation of Bob Silverman. He thought it would be a great idea to start up a music appreciation course that would be done using fairly conventional modalities. We have a lecture book and CDs of recorded musical excerpts and things like that. That was actually back in 1992. And then many things happened in terms of development of the web. And so I paired up with Jeff Miller, from what was then called distance education technology. They have a new rubric now, CTLT, but I forget what that precisely stands for. In any event, Jeff was extremely helpful in giving me ideas about how to set up an online course in music theory. And one thing that was nice about that was it gave me the opportunity to really create my own music theory textbook, multimedia style, though, so that all of the musical examples and things that you might normally just see in a textbook, you could actually hear. So that was quite a big experience for me, because it kind of gave me the opportunity to create my own learning environment for music theory. And originally, the idea was only to make this available to students in an online environment, but we found it quite successful, so now I actually use it for my on-campus classes as well. And I also happen to be working on an online version of music appreciation now for much the same reason.
That's great. How did you get into all of this? How did you become, you know, a professor that looks at acoustics and music theory and mathematics and all of that? What was the burning desire for you?
Well, it's a funny story, but a oddly very personal one. I simply signed up for a graduate course at one point in my career in the history and philosophy of science with a fellow named Stephen Straker. And Stephen Straker was a professor in the history department at UBC, specializing in the history and philosophy of science. And he got me very interested in all sorts of connections between music and the history of science. So he actually mentored me in this direction. He's one of the main reasons why I got involved in the Arts One program, because he said, you know, once I'd gotten my doctorate, he said, well, you should see about possibly teaching in this program. So it was kind of a natural outgrowth of Stephen's influence on me that I became interested in all these things, both as a researcher and as a teacher. And that's one reason why I did a benefit concert, because we established a memorial fund in Steve's memory for Arts One students that couldn't necessarily afford to come to UBC. We established a bursary to bring them in, and I thought I would do a benefit concert just to, you know, beef up the endowment a little bit. And then we also had some very generous audience members who came and decided to found a new endowment for a Stephen Straker scholarship. So I'm pleased to see that Stephen Straker's influence has not just stopped with me personally, but has actually extended to all sorts of wonderful endowments for students in the Arts One program at UBC.
Is Dr. Brandon Conneval, a professor who's jointly appointed in the Arts One program in the School of Music. This is Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. I'm your host, Farha Khan. I've had the pleasure of playing an interview I did with Dr. Brandon Conneval. If you'd like to learn more about his research or more about the Arts One program, you can visit his faculty homepages at www.music.ubc.ca. Or you can visit the Arts One program website at artsone.arts.ubc.ca. Today's the last show of the fall semester as classes finish this week at the university. Prof Talk will resume programming in the new year with more interviews from professors from a variety of disciplines. If you'd like to hear a podcast of this show or any previous episode of Prof Talk, you can visit citr.ca. And please do check out our blog at ubcproftalk.blogspot.com. For now, I will leave you with the piece of music that Dr. Conneval played in last year's benefit concert for the Stephen Straker Arts One Bursary Fund. I am Farha Khan. Thank you for listening today.
the piece of music that you're about to hear is how I actually began the fundraising concert that I gave a year and a half ago. It's a nocturne by Liszt. It's a piece that he worked on at different points during his life. It's relatively short and quite ethereal. It's a piece that I love to play because when I start playing it, I feel like I have no idea where this piece might end up.